Thanks for listening to Outcast World. You lock your front door, don't you? You wouldn't go out and leave the front door open. Well, that's essentially what you're doing when you're not using a VPN. Right now, your data is being tracked, stored, and sold by loads of people. For a lot of people that are listening to this show, that is not just annoying, it can also be very risky. NordVPN fixes it. It's fast, it's reliable, it's number one for consumers, and it takes less time to set up than ordering a takeaway. Outcast World listeners can get NordVPN for under £3 a month. That is up to 75% off. Just go to outcastworld.net. The link's at the top. Turn it on. Forget about it. Make yourself safer online with the number one NordVPN for under £3 a month at outcastworld.net.
On today's episode,
because Keir Starmer is this close to having a full revolt within his own party, it would seem.
The noises you make are not the noises I want to make Labour government to make. Why can't you simply make the point that you're... Look at that, they've got so much success and say NHS waiting lists, or there's a few metrics they can sell, but they can't, and they can't sell it. And the only thing they seem to be able to sell is the anti-trans, anti-migrant stuff that they're shit at doing. They're shit at doing that, so why do that?
Queer politics, sex, and culture. This is Outcast World.
Outcast World! Yeah!
Yeah.
We're here.
We're back. We're queer.
We're here, we're queer. We've been here and queer since 2021.
Since about 4 p.m.
In the studio today, but the show has been on since 2021.
Yeah.
And today, it's me and Topher. Putting the world to rights putting the world to rights I've never really known what it is.
I think to the rights sounds better.
To rights, putting the world to rights,
because it sounds like you're saying multiple things.
There's an Irish vibe as usual, you being originally Irish.
Yeah,
currently of
I'm going back in March.
Are you?
Yeah,
they're not sending you back, are they? That sounded like send it back.
I don't think I'd complain too much, but now I'm going to Cork, which is where my family come from.
Oh nice, that's
so
cute.
I'm seeing all my cousins, my aunties, my uncles. I've got a really big family. So a lot of them moved to South London, so a lot of them are here. Just speaking, because this is a woke podcast, so you know, like a lot of people will say, like, they're like, black people should go back to where they came from, blah, blah, blah. So Windrush got to the UK in 1948, right? I think it's 48, but my family got here in 1952. And then people look at me, and I've been called, like, a race traitor as well because of, like, who I'm married to or who I've dated. God. But I'm like, I was here after, my family bloodline were here after black people. But you're telling them... But I should be aligned with you. I mean, if we're looking at things so simplistically,
it's whoever got here first. Is that what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I should go back to Cork, and I am.
So there's an Irish theme, and the Irish theme is Topher's always Irish, and Charles Moriarty has not lived in Ireland for a long time. He's not lived in Dublin for a long time. Like, he left when he was what, 17, 18, came to the UK to make his name in photography. So we're going to be chatting to him about all of the stuff, including his new book, Brock, a bit more about his time with Amy, and just a bit of a look at politically what's going on in the world.
This is Outcast World.
Joining me is, from his gracious drawing room, by the looks of things, the photographer Charles Moriarty, someone who's never shy about saying what he thinks. You'll know his early work with Amy Winehouse on the album Frank. He's outspoken online about everything from Trump to the direction of the current Labour government, and his most recent book, Brock, has been out for, like, I think a month now, because that has been, Charles, that's been everywhere. You've been covered in Attitude, and then now you're really in with Emma, seeing you did the Attitude Plus thing.
It was very, very fun to have the cover of Attitudes. Is it Uncut?
That's the one.
I think. And for their first inaugural issue, which is their digital-only sort of little brother Attitude, for the kid,
yes,
issue, with the amazing Joe on the cover, which actually we shot in 2018, and it was really... It's an image that seems to connect with a lot of people for whatever reason, for fun or... sexiness, or, you know, I just love the look in Joe's eyes in it for me. But that was great. And I think it's 3 weeks tomorrow since Brock launched officially. And it's been nonstop, really, which is exciting and fun. And I'm just looking forward to getting it out into as many hands as possible. And hopefully people really... love it as much as I do. It's taken me a little while to sort of be able to sit with it. There was a night when I was up I got in from being at a friend's at about 11 o'clock at night, and there were 250 books that needed signing. And I was just like, all right, come on, let's just crack on. And so at around 3 o'clock in the morning, Brock, who was staying with me, totters down into the kitchen to get some water, and there, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing? And so he came and he sat with me, and we actually went through the book page by page together. And it was a really nice way of looking at that journey together, and because it's been a long time. It's been a 4 year sort of from beginning to end, and nearly five really, and I'm really proud of it, and it's been really lovely to delve into someone over that sort of long a period into their life, and I guess to throw my own perspective on it and to narrate him in as best I could, really.
How did you meet him? Because you've known him a long time, haven't you?
He was doing something with another friend of mine, Levi Foster, in New York in 2017. I think he was trying to get, there's a thing called Seed and Spark, where you can basically get funding to make a project happen, which he was doing to help get his movie Test funded. And I sort of, you know, he's a handsome chap. I clocked him and I was like, oh, gave him a follow. And then he hopped into the DMs and he said, hey, it'd be lovely to shoot sometime. Love your work. And then it took us another 4 years. COVID didn't help, obviously. And then we shot in August 2021. And then there was another then large gap of 3 years to May 2024. And not that we hadn't tried. There are times where I'd turned up in New York and then he'd moved to LA. It was always like, oh, if you're there, da da da. And he came to London one time and I wasn't here. And eventually we finally were in the same space, and he was in a good headspace to sort of, I think we, just a bit of magic yeah. happened, really. We went into the studio again in London. And then I guess I was sort of watching what was going on with him, how things were progressing with Test. And you know, projects can take time. And 9 years is a long time, though, to be pushing something and rewriting scripts. And the fact that that was all of a sudden going to actually now be happening, I was like, okay. Because I didn't really want to do a book that was just about aesthetics. I didn't want to just... I think it would have been mm-hmm. boring.
And there's plenty of them, I guess, isn't there?
Plenty of them. They've been done before. And there's lots of ways that you could have done it to make it interesting. But I thought it was much more interesting to take a little moment in someone's life, a look through a window, so to speak, and to try and capture that moment that they are living in. And that's really what the book's about. It's a build up to a moment that he's been working towards for close to a decade, and that I've sort of been aware of and watching for nearly 5 years. And I guess since I first met him, I've been aware of it since 2017. But it's been it's been beautiful to put it together, and the book, you know, the book is dedicated to the dreamers, and it is about following your dreams. There's a dream sequence in there if people catch it, but it's been fun to make, and I really hope people will enjoy all the aspects of this man, because I think it's very easy to just see him as pretty, but I do think there's a solid head between the shoulders.
So what's the conversations been like from people responding to it? Firstly, that from what have you heard from people responding to Brock since you've put it out there? Because it's a global release, isn't it? And people have seen it everywhere.
The US copies arrive tomorrow. So right. I'm expecting a lot more conversation coming from that side, because that's where the majority have actually sold. I mean, most people's opinion has been great. I mean, I don't know how deep people have delved into it. I do think some people say, you know, they keep on going back to it and finding things that they missed the first time round, or understanding it from different perspectives. you know, and that's really lovely. I mean, that's essentially what you want. You don't want someone to look at it and then it just sit on the coffee
it's
table.
It's not that kind of work, though, is it? You've right, Don, read that now. Like, that's not what you've made, is it? You've made something that people will continue to come back to time and time again, I guess.
I hope so. And as well with, you know, with hopefully the release of Test the Film in 2026. Mm-hmm. You know, it's in that mode now where it's just been finished and it's after distribution, but it will continue on the conversation that's in the book. So it's sort of a starter to a lot of other conversations that are going to happen down the line. So I like that interconnectedness. And I think some of the images are good enough for people to come back to and just ponder, but and some of them are just fun and some of them are just sexy, you know. It as a whole, they tell a full narrative, but you know, you can just enjoy it for an image for what it is as well.
So that's what you've heard back from people who've already read it, looked at it. How would you describe it? We'll say read it
back, Graham.
Experienced, let's say experienced, because there's a lot to it, isn't there?
It's got four narratives within it. So you've got my narrative as the photographer, you've got Brock's narrative as the subject, you've got the narrative of the film that's being made within the book, and then you have the narrative, the overall narrative of the book itself, which tries to pull on ideas of what is real, what's not real, fictional reality, the idea of creating realities for people to exist within, to tell a story. I mean, there's lots of different lines and threads you can pull on, depending on what you yourself are bringing to the book.
So what does he make of the reaction and being the star of the focal point of some work like this that's so important to you? How does he feel about that?
I think he feels pretty good
I'd
about
imagine
it.
So yeah.
I hope he does. I think there was a moment on the launch where I think both of us were feeling a little overwhelmed. I think he very much was.
Yeah.
And I think because he didn't really have his people around him. This was, you know, him in a foreign place, and I think all of a sudden being surrounded by people who were all there to celebrate a book that's about you.
It's a lot.
You know, it's a lot, but you know, he did it like a you know, true star that he is, and it was, it's great. And I hope that he will see it as a true account. I hope he'll see it as a true account of at least what I was there for and what I could bring to the public and through my lens, basically, I hope he can enjoy it down the line as a special moment that, you know, happened.
You've said that photography can be like political even when it isn't overt. Do you think that this project a little bit might feel in any way slightly political, because you're a very political person, and it lands at a, like, you know, you're talking about the American box landing and the great bulk of sales you're expecting to be in the US at a time when, you know, you've got a government there that's trying to certainly exclude LGBTQ plus references from like the narrative. Is that on purpose?
I mean, it's not on purpose. I mean, my work to date has really always been about talking, you know, sharing queer histories, sharing queer stories. I think it is, as a queer artist, it is important to share my perspective, where I come from, the life that I live, the life that I see other people around me from the LGBTQ community existing in. To date has been a bit more focused on men, which, you know, I think down the line that's probably going to start to change a bit more.
In what way?
I think my next book is going to be Still Life, but I think it's definitely going to be coded in its own way. I think you can tell a lot through the use of objects, you know. On a very basic level, you could talk about the language of flowers and just trying to have conversations through through colour, through use of artifacts that might be, you know, connected to memory. And it's also, it's trying to find, it's like I always use, there's a photograph that I took of my niece on a swing. And you can't see her face, but she's swinging out from a tree on a rope. And anyone can look at that picture almost globally and memory connect to it. Because we've all experienced that moment in our lives. We've all experienced that feeling. And it's, I guess it's trying to understand how to share with as many people as possible ideas through symbolism and that sort of thing that I kind of want to try in it. There's lots of different things I want to try and attempt down the line, but I guess I'm just trying to step away, I guess, from the more masculine and the more, gay-rooted work and have a bit more of a play with everything else out there, because there's so many stories to tell within our community. And I think certain people within our community need their stories told more than others at the moment, particularly our trans brothers and sisters.
So I was going to say, something that's been running through my mind for a bit is there's been some... Charles doesn't know I'm going to ask him this, by the way. There's not been, like, pre-agreed answers or anything. He's very open like this. Not like interviewing some people and they want everything written down. So I'm hitting you with this from something that was going on in my head. I've seen a lot of work, well, some work, actually, not enough recently, focusing on trans masculine identities. And I was really interested as to how that kind of potentially spills over. It certainly does aesthetically, into the work that kind of you do, capturing the male form. And is that a route potentially? Because that seems very now. That seems very prescient, doesn't it? The idea of something exploring trans masculine identity with aesthetically pleasing models at times, and also people who are really telling a story about a background and a journey. And that was something that was going on in my head. And of all the people I know that's interested in all of these kind of things, you're the main one, you're the guy.
So I'm just writing all your ideas.
You write that down. You can have that. I'll take a cut. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's the direction of travel?
I think it's one of them. I think what I'd like to do and what I'm slowly starting to figure out is to start talking to some people within the community and go from there. And I feel like once I start pulling on that thread, it will just start to come at me pretty quickly. And what I realize, really, regardless of who I'm photographing, what I am is trying to be a storyteller, you know. And I guess I'm going to go and hunt down some stories that need telling and that need to be placed front and center as much as possible. But I mean, with regard to, you know, the previous comment about the US and Brock going over there, I mean, the timeline of this isn't to coincide in any way with American politics, which, you know, are shocking at the moment. World AIDS Day, the White House has chosen to no longer celebrate World AIDS Day or pay any heed to it whatsoever.
And cancelled US aid funding for HIV drugs in the global south.
They talk about the volume of people who have died from the cancellation of USAID. I think it's probably in the millions at this stage. Whether it's from hunger, from lack of medication, all sorts of reasons, but we're living in scary times in many respects. You know, we have people who are in government who are making choices that are pretty dark. The long-term effects of some of the decisions that have been made, and I don't just mean by the US. I think the UK government has made some decisions of late that I am really not happy about, and I think a lot of people aren't happy about.
Well, we really didn't vote for them, did we? If you think about it, people in the US, you could argue, well, the people who voted for Trump knew ish what they were going to get. People who voted for Labour in June, July 2024. Didn't vote for this.
This is not a Labour. This is not a Labour.
No,
government.
Certainly not on its message. I don't know if you've seen Labour. The budget. I felt like it wasn't an it wasn't outrageous. It just it's funny, isn't it? Because they made so many moves forward in a lot of ways, redistribution of wealth and the two-child benefit cap and all the things that they did. But I still looked at them and thought, the noises you make are not the noises I want to make Labour government to make. Why can't you simply make the point that you're, I mean, look at that, they've got so much success in, say, NHS waiting lists, or there's a few metrics they could sell, but they can't, and they can't sell it, and the only thing they seem to be able to sell is the anti-trans, anti-migrant stuff that they're shit at doing. They are shit at doing that, so why do that? I don't get it.
Well, I mean, I think the only reason they did those things in the budget last week is because Keir Starmer is this close to having a full revolt within his own party, it would seem. And I think if they'd had their way, the child benefit cap would not have been removed. I did not sit down and I did not look properly at the budget. So I really...
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It's just the noise around them for a long time has been... I mean, look at the continuing to accept the findings of the CAS report, which was a whitewash, we know that, and to continue to make the kind of noises that they make about trans and non-binary people in public spaces, and then to be surprised, like Keir Starmer was, that his niece was beaten up as a queer person. Like, what is that?
The irony. I sort of just thought it was, and I hate to say it, it's somewhat comical that he was so, seemed so shocked on whatever podcast he was on that his niece and their partner was attacked. Have you listened to the rhetoric that has been coming out of your own office? Yeah. Like, what did you think was going to happen? Once you open up the door for one set of minority, you open them up for everyone. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a shitty state of affairs.
Yeah.
Late.
Are you a Green now?
I am. I've been drawn in by Mr. Polanski. He talks and I'm like, yeah, I agree with you. And I feel like he talks with sense.
Yeah.
I also like a lot of the things that when he's on TV shows and talking with various other politicians from other parties, and they'll say something and they won't be wrong, but they'll be choosing like a very slim percentage to hold on to go back against him with. And I just think, I think everyone who votes, and or I think every person in this country needs to start reading factual information and figuring out for themselves what is going on, because I think there's far too many people who are looking at the Daily Fail, you know, online or in print, etc., etc., or, you know, getting their news from TikTok. I don't know who puts the news out on TikTok or whose opinions.
I found someone that does, some influencer that just stands there at a desk with a nice lighting rig and goes, you won't believe this. And it's delivered in that style. And he was given I think he's British. He looks like very twinky blonde hair, kind of big blonde hair. And Trump gave him a seat in his press conferences. He gave him a, because that's the kind of ride they want, isn't it?
But I think the problem that you have is, so for instance, the other day when the Times and a bunch of other media outlets uncovered that one of the people who'd been spreading far-right media and sort of AI creations that sort of pushed for anti-immigration ideas was some kid who was based in Sri Lanka.
He'd become rich off it.
And he was just, I think he got £300,000. Out of it, you know, which in Sri Lanka you're doing.
I mean, that's all right. Yeah, I'll take £300,000 if anyone's got it. It's he's made proper money out of it, really, hasn't he?
But people need to start understanding. It's the same on places like X/Twitter, whatever you want to call it.
Let's call it Twitter.
Find out the root of where all.
Please,
let's call it Twitter. Let's keep it. Let's go old school. when you find the root of where all these people are, where they're coming from, where they're... It was the same in Ireland. Like, there was a Ku Klux Klan general of some sort was fueling right-wing ideas in Ireland of late. And this is the thing. People need to stop taking anything that comes at them face value, because everything... people have an agenda, and some people just want chaos. And chaos makes certain people an awful lot of money. So
it's agenda. Yeah. It's sniffing out the agenda, and I think people need to learn to sniff out the agenda in every bit of information that comes at them, don't they? Because everything is inherently biased in some direction or other, I think. Like, you know, I read The Guardian every day, have done since I was a teenager. It was kind of like a religion to me. That's who I am, that's what I'm about. But then, you know, I read trans coverage in, you know, coverage of trans and non-binary issues in The Guardian, and I'm like, wow, this is bullshit. I don't agree with this. But, you know, then I could see an article from the BBC and go, well, the BBC's done a good job here, from someone from usually foreign reporting and stuff like that, BBC World. I can go, I can accept that at face value. Can I accept what Laura Koonsberg does in her interviews on a Sunday morning on BBC One to some sort of Labour figure where she gives them a grilling? Can I accept that that's unbiased? No. So I think we're in a world where we're having to constantly sift through information, even from trusted sources that often is compromised, or it fits someone's worldview.
Well, yeah, Donald Trump just sued the BBC for something that was edited, and that he decided was edited in a biased way. I mean, it's probably...
They shouldn't have edited it that way, but he did do that.
But he did, but at the same time, the edit didn't change the outcome of the reality. Like, I think the edit was perfectly fine. I think Donald Trump is just trying to screw with any media outlet he possibly can, who in any way, shape or form could come after him, comes after him. I mean, he's basically just swinging the giant axe of the White House and, you know, trying to get as much cash as...
Oh, there is that. Yeah, yeah. £5 billion. So if they gave him, what was it, up to $5 billion he wanted? And he's probably not going to get it, is he? Because he was suing them in Florida, and obviously US libel law is a lot different. That's the license fee for a year. Imagine we paid our license fee.
BBC would stop. I don't know if that would survive.
No, I don't know if it would. And I think that they would enjoy that as an outcome. So I can feel like the BBC is compromised because it's got right-wing people on its board who are steering it in all kind of directions. And it's got people who turn up at editorial meetings who you've heard the stories behind the scenes on Newsnight back in the day. They talk about the news agents, like, will hound supposedly leftist or liberal journalists. That is going on there. But it's a beast. It's a behemoth, isn't it? There's multiple things pulling in different directions at the BBC. I always feel very sorry for them, actually.
Politics. Ah, fun.
Hey, I want to talk to you about Amy. I want to talk to you about your early work with Amy, because your work with Amy got you in the National Portrait Gallery. It made you famous, didn't it, really? It made you famous, it made you a name, and you witnessed a really unique story in popular culture and music. Amy was a legend, and as time moves on, she sort of cemented as a legend. And I think that happens sometimes when people pass quite young, doesn't it, as well? And she was great. Tell me about the Amy that you knew, because you caught her before the fame machine kicked in.
Well, I met Amy the day I did her album cover. She came to my little apartment in Spitalfields with a bunch of friends. Who were sort of just our little support group for the shoot, helping with makeup and styling. And I'd asked her to bring some music, so we'd put on a CD of I think what at that time was sort of demo stuff. And we just sort of sat and chatted. And by then, Amy had already worked with some other photographers at Island Records. That Island Records had provided, and I just think she wasn't happy. She didn't feel like it was her. Certainly, she didn't feel like it was representative enough of who she was to be an album cover. And so we just chatted, and the things that she made very clear was that she was in search of authenticity. She just wanted to, you know, be herself. And I wasn't a photographer, but I had a camera, and I was happy to just try and, you know, see what we could do. It wasn't like I had a lighting rig with me or anything. It literally was a camera with a flash. It was very reportage-y. And we sort of just went for it at sort of dusk in Spitalfields and up Brick Lane. And then we finished. Amy was doing some live vocals recording in a little studio up by Old Street. Can't remember the name of the studios. And yeah, it was, I mean, I didn't really think a huge amount of it then, and gave her the roll of film at the end of the night. And I was like, off you go. It was just supposed to be a test. And then from that, obviously, came the album cover and a couple of other great pictures from London. And the next time we would see each other, she was performing at a small club, which is when I finally got to really see her sing with a band. And obviously, she was incredible. Her whole family were there, her gran, who she was very close to. Annie Lennox was there, who Amy was almost going to go on tour with, but that didn't end up happening. I think Amy decided that their kind of music was just, they were just too different to, for her to be her her support act. But she did support Jamie Cullum at one point, which I think, I guess they're a bit more...
Sounds a bit like the record company wanted that to happen if it was Jamie Cullum. He was very of the time, wasn't he? A singer-songwriter.
It was early days, and it was probably a nice, soft start for Amy. Not to knock Jamie Cullum.
No, he's thoroughly talented. It's just very stylized, though, isn't it? It's very specific.
And because she was putting out, I guess, a hip-hop jazz cross record, it sort of fit into his sort of genre, I guess. But, you know, and after that, the next time we met, we shot in New York, and everything went completely wrong, up the wall, total disaster. But we did get some great photos in the end. I just couldn't see them because I was
stressed.
So, I mean, it wasn't like I was shooting digital, so I didn't see anything until several days after Amy had left. But I think sometimes it's very hard to see what's in an image if what you were setting out to accomplish gets completely destroyed via a massive thunder and lightning storm that didn't stop for 8 hours. I felt like I hadn't achieved what I set out to do. I felt like I'd sort of really like pulled what I could together, but you know, I didn't really think of it very highly. It was really only, and after that, you know, and then Amy and I became buddies. I used to go up to her place in Camden and make dinner, and we'd chat, or there'd be a gaggle of us going out and having a dance somewhere, or I would often be cooking dinner at my place and people would turn up. And that was...
How long did that go on for? Because that sounds like you were pretty tight with Amy.
A couple of years. And then I went back to Ireland and... lost touch, and then, you know, all of a sudden I remember I moved back to London and I was in the car with my brother and Rehab came on, and I was like, oh fucking Christ, she's kind of done it, because the sound alone from that record just was like,
there was nothing like it,
and between her voice, the way that Ronson and Salaam Remy put that album together, it's a beast. I still find it really funny that Pitchfork only gave it a 6.
Did they? Some of them reviews don't date well, do they? If someone's been a bitch, someone you've fallen out with at some point reviews you and gives you a 5 out of 10.
It was like someone was having a bad day. Yeah. Oh, well. It's quite funny. I think they really need to maybe come back to that and have another thing.
Just republish it and re-review it. Charles, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for coming on, and I know we'll speak soon.
This is Outcast World.
Well, there we go. What a week it's been. Charles had lots to say as usual. Couldn't fucking shut him up. And
Irish. That's what happens. Yeah.
What are they like? Eh? Mm. Topher's been an absolute dream.
It has. I've enjoyed it. See you soon.
Stay with me. This is incredibly simple. If you've ever used Grindr, Googled something rather personal, or posted anything political, your data is already being tracked and sold. Think about that. A VPN can make you a lot safer. NordVPN takes about 2 minutes to set up, one click to turn on, and it just runs in the background. There's no effort after that. It's consistently voted number one across a load of metrics for consumers. It's fast, it's secure, and there's no drop-offs. Outcast World listeners can get up to 75% off NordVPN right now, which brings it down to under £3 a month. Go to outcastworld.net. Top of the page, tap the link, then you're done. Outcastworld.net for up to 75% off NordVPN.